Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Explorers, welcome to X Squared Radio, first live program to come back to you in the year 2009. The solar wind tonight is 326 kilometers per second, and it's not big, but it is significant. Emerging sunspot 1010 is a member of new solar cycle 24. This small but growing active region is the latest in a series of new cycle spots that began popping up on the sun about 4 months ago. Very, very small and quiet at first. Solar activity is still low, but we appear to be leaving solar minimum behind and beginning the slow ascent to the solar maximum in 2011 to 2013. If you looked up last night, you'd notice something amazing. This weekend's full moon is a perigee moon, as much as 50,000 kilometers closer to Earth and 30% brighter than usual. It is the closest the moon will be this year. If you lived in a cold region, you more than likely saw one of the brightest moonbows ever. If you have a telescope that is capable of taking pictures, snap a few. If you have a digital camera with a zoom, you can do the same. Who knows what detail you'll pick up, but the moon will not be as close again for about 13 months. This would be a good chance to get that shot. Also in the news, is it a car? Is it a plane? Actually, it's both. The first flying automobile, equally at home in the sky or on the road, is scheduled to take to the air next month, they say. If it survives its first test flight, the Terra Fugia Transition, which can transform itself from a two-seater road car to a plane in 15 seconds is expected to land in showrooms in about 18 months' time. Even though it uses regular gas and will fit into your garage, it will not be allowed to fly, I think, and will drift into the annals of popular science just like the Mueller 400, which, looking at the pictures of this, isn't nearly as impressive as the Mueller 400. We shall see. Most people can't make their way down the interstate without hitting something. I shudder to think what they would do in the air. Last week, we ran an archive of Joseph LaStella, president and CEO of Green Star Products. He holds more world records with electric cars than any man alive. Tonight is a little different, however. Tonight is January 11th, 2015, and we are coming to you live from a bungalow in southern Idaho. The following program is true and factual. I am coming to you through a beryllium ion modem invented in the year 2006, which came into our possession from an abandoned rail car swept into a glacier, flow by an avalanche outside of Ontario, Oregon. We found it while looking for scrap steel with a metal detector in the summer of 2013. The floods that occurred after the solar storms of December devastated the Northwest and still form a frozen river that has crushed nearly every major interstate in the Northwest into gravel. According to our history, 2008 was a year of records for cold and snowfall and brought the global warming controversy to the point of international conflict. In the U.S., the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration registered 63 local snowfall records and 115 lowest ever temperatures for the month of October. Congress was under so much pressure to do something that they all but destroyed Wall Street. The elections of 2008 turned out to be a nearly religious revolution in politics. By the time the fanfare of the inauguration died down, the reality of the world's situation became apparent. Tonight, January 11th, 2015, we are going to discuss three of the main areas you will need to be aware of. It not only takes all the energy of our batteries to bring you this message, but we are taking a great risk in doing so. However, we are able to have two-way communication tonight, so the phone lines are open all night. U.S. and Canada, you can still reach us at 888-228-4494. Canada, we have a special toll-free number for you, 877-489-6350. Anywhere else, on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us at 530-776-5154 or 5185. We will take all callers. If you're using Skype, just simply put in BBS Radio. And if you're using PalTalk, you can reach us at bbsradio_com. We will welcome your phone calls as long as our batteries hold out. What I primarily want to do is tell you what happened between January 11th, 2009 and January 11th, 2015. My purpose is to inspire you to change what you are doing and how you are dreaming about things, so that what we can change is a shift of consciousness, the mean consciousness in time to save the human race. My purpose is also to give you hope, although what you are about to hear may be shocking and frightening, there is a solution. I repeat, everything that I will share with you tonight is factual and true. This is why we have sent this message back to you in the year 2009. In the spring of 2009, the fatted calf, once known as the Federal Reserve, became effectively bankrupt. The public had been quietly withdrawing its cash from banks for about a year prior to the collapse. I say quietly because the news agencies were ordered not to report the facts. In order to prevent a panic-driven financial run on the banks, it really didn't help. The first story broke in the fall of 2008, but lost momentum until California cut off interstate banking in July of 2009. Then it all came to light. I hope you're ready. Here we go. The administration suffered more losses, and finally the Supreme Court allowed a new council to be formed in early 2011. The president asked for and was allowed to appoint another vice president. That expanded the executive branch to three people. The president went into hiding except for televised statements. One vice president handled foreign affairs, which was the former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. The other vice president handled domestic affairs. Although the public was told that Biden held this position, it was clear that Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, flanked by Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke and Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation Chairman Sheila Blair, were jointly managing that position. The formation of the triumvirate and the year 2008 events leading up to this decision were received with the typical public apathy. So I am reporting to you what was discovered when the unfortunate history was revealed. In the fall of 2008, what would become the new vice presidency forced Bank of America's Kenneth Lewis to sign an agreement detailing how the government would take stakes valued at a combined $125 billion in their banks and impose new restrictions on executive pay and dividend policies. And as he was doing so, Morgan Stanley chief executive John Mack, whose company was among the most vulnerable in the group to the swirling financial crisis, quickly signed. In the same meeting, Wells Fargo chairman Richard Kovacevic asked why this was needed. They weren't allowed to negotiate. Secretary Paulson requested that each of them sign. Quote, it was for their own good and the good of the country, he said, according to a person in the room. In the last months of 2008, Wall Street's major independent investment banks disappeared. Two of the nation's largest banks were acquired just before they failed. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were placed into a government conservatorship. The largest insurance company, for all practical purposes, was nationalized. Bank deposit insurance ceilings were raised, and certain money market funds received government guarantees that their price would not fall below a dollar. And certain commercial paper received government guarantees. Allegedly, Congress had crafted what the founding fathers could not. The nation's first national bank was formed without so much as a single vote being cast. The financial problems weren't over. The administration outlawed cash and issued an executive order that all cash be returned to the banks within 30 days. After 30 days, cash was worthless, and anyone caught trading in cash was arrested and audited into bankruptcy. The new electronic identifications were issued so fast that everyone knew the Treasury Department had been working on them for years. Although the official position sounded like an emergency move, the public knew it was not true. It didn't make any difference. Millions of jobs were terminated within months. People tried to survive as self-employed contractors, refusing to pay or even file taxes. Employers were ordered to withhold taxes and Social Security anyway, with the addition of a new commerce surcharge, depending on the field of labor. Essential jobs were free from assessment. Service industries were hit most heavily. The announcements were that it was a temporary measure to help stabilize the faith and credit of the United States, sort of like war bonds were during the early 20th century. But just like those war bonds, They were never honored, and the tax never ended. Now, I don't want to make this program totally about the financial collapse. It is important that you know about these events so you can take action now on your own. I will tell you why in the third hour of tonight's program. It isn't vital that all of you understand and take action. It is critical that 64 of you understand what I am reporting to you tonight. Without your awareness and consciousness and presence, you won't survive these events and be present to avert the events of 2015. This may be the last time I can come back to urge you to do so. I don't want you to be alarmed, but I do want you to be informed. What I just told you is actually happened. I know it sounds strange that I can come back to you from the year 2015 and inform you of these things, but in your heart, you already know these things are well in motion. Those names that I mentioned to you of bank presidents, insurance corporation presidents are all real, and those events actually did happen. Research it yourself. The stage is set, and I will continue through this hour to lay the facts out for you so that you can see how things are going. But you are not powerless. You must realize that you have within you the power to move all of this in another direction. This is the fifth year for X Squared Radio to be on the air. Four strong years with BBS Radio. We could not make it without you. I know that there are many of you out there in countries like Japan, Australia, New Zealand, Argentina, Canada, and all across the United States who quietly listen to this program at night while you're working on your favorite projects or while you're traveling down the highway. I haven't let that faith down. I feel a sense of responsibility every time I sit down behind this microphone. And over the last few years, we have had many world-class experts on this program. And we have asked them questions that you wanted us to ask, that we wanted to ask, so that they would know that you care, that you're interested in doing something to save the human race from the precipice, the cliff that each of us feel we are standing before. We are now convinced, after all these many months, experts and books and videos and DVDs and studies, that this race of man has been here before. We have stood before this very precipice before, and we have been unable to retreat from it. We have gone over. This time, we have the ability to communicate like never before. We don't have to stand on a pulpit or mail out a letter. We don't have to hire couriers or send word out by horseback. We can instantly reach the entire planet at one time with one message. It has never, ever been this way before. This is a time when we actually have the capability to walk away from the edge of the cliff. I think we have a caller on the line. Can you give us your first name and where you're calling from, please?
How you doing? This is Ramon from New York.
Hello, Ramon. Welcome to the program. Can you hear me okay coming back from 2015?
I hear you great. If it's true what you're telling me, that means you succeeded in inventing the, what did you call it?
The beryllium ion modem.
Yes. Did that happen in 2015 as you predicted?
Well, the modem was actually invented in 2006. It's made with interacting particles which change spin spontaneously like an atomic switch, creating a binary event like ones and zeros. And it responds instantaneously over space and time, so it makes a nice interdimensional modem.
I'm assuming you didn't know about this in 2007 because you spoke about it as it wasn't invented yet.
Well, actually, some people know about it and some people don't. We were speaking with Jim Bell, who is the scientist who runs the Mars Rover program for Caltech, and we were discussing the beryllium ion modem with him, and he was as much in the dark as most of the world is. He agrees that the theory is sound, but that the item had not been invented yet, but I can assure you that that they exist and they function.
I want to ask you about, which you're probably going to talk about in the third hour, which will stop me. I think you already know what I'm going to ask you. Did you succeed it in the summer of 2009?
Oh, that's a really good question. Actually, the voyage did take place, but it wasn't with the full 100 that we had expected. Due to funding constraints, we had to cut back on the number of people that we were able to take above the Arctic Circle. But the film was made, and it was distributed as far as we could, and actually the awareness was quite good. But we fell short. We needed 64 beings who were in the position and had the awareness to avert the path in history that we currently have taken. So in 2015, the social condition of the world is very close to third world in condition. There is not much travel going on, not much communication going on. Most of the larger cities have emptied out into the countryside.
I have one last question. You said there were 64 of us that must have had to get to.
Yes, we have felt that when we calculate this backward to the year 2009, 64 is the beginning number. Once those 64 beings begin multiplying their knowledge with people that they know, mathematically it cascades to a point where we reach critical mass with the society, and we're actually to change the mean consciousness, the average consciousness of the human race. And we actually move the entire Earth and its place in the galaxy to a different spot, and we're able to save the race of mankind.
Last question. I've always felt that if we became more telepathic, that things would go better. No longer you would have language barriers, and it's kind of hard for you to lie to me when I can feel your emotions. Are we more telepathic in my business?
You're absolutely right. As the Earth is moving toward the end of the precession, it is nearing a galactic plane. In the second hour, there's some very important information that has just been revealed by NASA. Just been discovered recently, in the last few days.
In their timeline or in mine?
It is in your timeline. In your timeline. What happens is we are beginning just now to detect the energy levels increasing and changing in frequency as we near this galactic plane. The result is it is beginning to switch on capabilities in the human DNA. We are now, in your time, just at the threshold of evolution. And it's been the first time in more than 20,000 years that this has occurred.
All right. Unless you have something that I need to know, Right now, I'm going to get offline and listen to you on the internet.
Thank you so much for the call, Ramon. We have always enjoyed your presence and look forward to you visiting us throughout the year.
Quick question. Do we meet in the next 2 years?
Do we meet in the next 2 years?
Yes.
As a matter of fact, in 2010, there's a series of conferences, and they're advertised in the underground. Usually these only take place on the West Coast, but as you'll learn, the turmoil that's coming up on the West Coast and Northwest, these are now changing venue and beginning to take place on the East Coast. So the people in New York will finally have access to this kind of information. So the likelihood of us meeting is very high.
All right. I'll keep listening off the air.
Thank you, Ramon. All right, as I was saying, we wanted to get the critical level of 64, because as the 64 begin to multiply their knowledge to others, as they teach and demonstrate and help others, the mathematical equation of how the mathematical progression of how those 64 expand, we actually reach a critical mass in the human race, and the mean consciousness, the average consciousness of the human race begins to shift. And if we can shift it in time, we can avert the events of 2015. I'll continue with the history lesson here. By the end of 2010, the American dollar had all but collapsed as a world currency. The strategy of ending world terror, illegal drug sales, and counterfeiting was a complete failure. The war on terror was officially ended by President Obama's publicity team. It was exposed as a sham for funneling trillions of dollars into space-based weapons to control the world from a computer. But that didn't really end the conflicts. They just took on different names. The troops were withdrawn from the Middle East. Some said it was a publicity stunt designed to change the mood of the country and stimulate confidence. Some national reporters said it was to aid public safety by restoring domestic National Guard strength during the political confusion of changing the Constitution. Some said it was because the government was broke and couldn't afford to support foreign wars for a while. And still others claimed that it was a move toward isolationism. You'll recall after World War I, the country was tired of foreign conflict and of the Depression. They withdrew from the world and tried to do business internally to help the nation buy American. It worked for a while. Unemployment was unheard of, and America became mightier than ever by hoarding its technology and its money. But even though the real solution to world peace was clearly demonstrated, the model was not expanded to meet the needs of the entire human race. Within 20 years, the world was at war again, and hasn't stopped fighting ever since. Obama's team suffered from early cabinet resignations and the Philadelphia oil spill. There was a supertanker that crashed during a terrible late spring storm and shut down the Delaware Bay. The harbor pilot reported that he refused to bring the ship into the bay and that he was fired for this. The next day, the ship broke apart as it ran into the warehouse district and spilled more than 1 million barrels of crude into the river. The public called for resignations and got them. It did not help clean up the mess. With the troops home, there were plenty of hands to do the work, But that was also part of the problem. After the financial collapse of 2009, the public couldn't find jobs. Businesses couldn't get loans to buy equipment or build new factories, so they couldn't provide jobs either. And the addition of 250,000 unemployed soldiers to that market saddled the states with unbearable welfare expenses. America's allies, as though sensing the nation's illness, quarantined the dollar, and the national debt was called due and payable. The financial wizards could not conjure a solution. Many took their retirements, left the country, or simply disappeared. There was no one to prosecute or accuse as Congress jockeyed for the pulpit to condemn and excoriate everyone except themselves. As we look back on those days, there was something that could have been done if the leaders of the countries would just see past their own payoffs. From the energy brokers, they could have directed the world in a new direction, one we are imploring that you demand from your governments now, before it is too late. By late 2011, the legends and evidence left behind by numerous great civilizations were finally acknowledged by world leaders. They had no choice. Billions had heard of the Mayans' calendar and knew that the year 2012 called for some kind of galactic alignment. Before MIT astronomer Shepard Duhamel discovered the truth, some astronomers agreed and did not, and some did not, that there was a supermassive spinning black hole at the center of every galaxy. His 2008 report was reviewed again and distributed around the globe when the first gravity wave hit the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory in Hanford, Washington in October of 2011. The first wave was worthy of publication. The world's first networked Michelson-Morley interferometer made significant history when it detected its first black hole. But the champagne had barely lost its bubbles when the plane of intense gravity formed by a Merkaba-like magnetic field was located in space for the first time. The ripple in space-time was theoretical at first. The second wave came about 30 days later and began changing everything. The satellite signals coming back from the edge of the heliosphere stopped first. Then the signals from Saturn and Mars were interrupted. Acting NORAD officials leaked a story that rocked the civilian world. An international military team had been flying missions to the moon and Mars for more than 20 years. The vehicles traveled without rockets, so the public wasn't aware of what was transpiring. The crafts utilized a new dimensional motor developed by Sandia Labs. Rumors were that they acquired it through trade with other planets. We still do not know for sure how they learned to slip between dimensions successfully. NASA turned out to be a public show, as unwitting participants were launched into space with ancient Earth technology to keep the world's public unsure of the level of technology really available. The reason for the NORAD story leak is unclear. We still don't know. But the Mars base and moon bases were stranded without support. The craft could not slip through dimensions without deep satellite support, and the solar synchronous satellites placed as phased navigation devices were destroyed by the second gravity wave pulse. The induced electrical pulse destroyed the gravity transducers. The instant communication between paired particles remains constant, but the switching is on an atomic level and must be multiplied billions of times accurately in order to be useful in 3D operations. One error in multiplication gives exactly the opposite result. The reliability and repeatability is checked billions of times a second in our gravitational field. But the length of a second is predictably changed during dimensional shifts only when the gravitational field is known. In the presence of strong gravity pulses, this prediction cannot be made accurately. The loss of people and craft in time is what prompted the leak. We believe, as the international government team was trying to facilitate a massive exodus from Earth of the elite from each of the sponsoring countries, an officer took it upon himself to leak the story and the facts. The discovery that the ancient civilizations attempted the same thing was earth-shaking. The pieces of the human galactic puzzle began to fall into place by December 2011. I can tell you, as I report this to you, that the confidence of the public in their world leaders was at an all-time low. Once prosperous and bountiful, life on Earth became a struggle. Social networks and social mores took a turn. But there were other things happening. We'll discuss that more in the second hour. Other things happening because of the existence of these pulses and other frequencies, some of which are just now making the news in your time in 2009. No nation was untouched by the third wave just before Christmas 2011. The geosynchronous satellites controlling cell phones and the internet were wiped out. The entire third world went dark first, as they had no landlines to speak of. The fiber networks went out next, as services were rerouted to optical trunk lines. The national utility management grid collapsed, plunging the entire Northeast into darkness. There were local pockets of electrical power available, but the grid couldn't be managed, so substations wouldn't connect their bus bars to the grid. They opted to supply local markets only. The Midwest suffered the worst, because the winter was particularly brutal. Since 1998, the Earth had begun cooling. That fact was denied by the political world because global warming was generating huge financial and political returns. National environmentalists even blamed global cooling on global warming. Going back a little in history, the winter of 2009 produced so much snow and Arctic temperatures in Canada and the Northwest that the snow did not melt in the summer. The amount of energy reflected back out into space reduced the temperatures of the Earth by a full degree Celsius in 2 years. We have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hello, Dr. Agnew. This is Mark from Nashport, Ohio. How are you doing?
Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
You know, this is really an interesting program, especially considering the date being the 11th of January. Last year, for one reason or another, on the 11th of January, I kind of wrote down what I thought would happen from about 2008 until about 2016, and I just found the interesting timing here that you're doing this show on January the 11th as well.
Wow, did you find the paper? Do you have it?
Yes, I do. I have it right here. I can read a few of the things I predicted. I don't want to take too much of your time up.
No, no, please do. I'm totally fascinated.
It's really kind of interesting. Anyway, January the 11th, I predicted that in 2008 we would see the devaluation of the dollar and that the stock market would drop below 10,000. Well, it actually dropped much farther than that. And then in 2008 to 2009, I predicted that we would start to see satellite TV and cell phones begin to go down, and then we would have more continual power outages, some being statewide. We would have floods, tidal waves, earthquakes, and we would start to see food prices peak. And in 2009, I think we'll see the bird flu. We'll start to see a lack of food and even some starvation in some places. There'll be social disobedience, riots, and I think the dollar will collapse in 2009, and that we might see an establishment of the Amero as a new currency. Is that something that happened in the timeline you see, or what do you see for 2009?
As a matter of fact, we're going to cover that in just a few minutes. That is exactly what happened. The dollar did collapse because the national debt was called due. And then the banks, I think I already mentioned this, the federal government, through an executive order, actually outlawed the existence of cash. And people were given literally 30 days to turn their cash back into the banks to get credit for it. And if they held on to it, it was considered contraband. And it could have been, confiscated, and people were issued electronic identification. And then the Amero is what the U.S. Began trading in, because it combined the national wealth of Canada, the United States, and Mexico.
That's quite interesting. Kind of coincides with what I'm seeing as well. In 2010, I have some predictions, and I'd like to compare them against what you see here.
Sure.
I see part of the population will go into prison camps. I'll see the stock market will drop below 5,000. Government corruption becomes an established fact, and we'll see a partial civil war in the U.S. Gun ownership will be outlawed, and the North American Union will become official.
Well, the North American Union became official in 2008. It didn't actually make national news until mid-2009, but Bush signed it into law in the last months of his presidency. And as far as conflict, we were surprised that it did not break out into that. The prisoner camps really didn't materialize. They talked about it, but it didn't really materialize. However, what you mentioned on the Civil War is interesting. It's not so much a war as it is a movement towards secession. Because of the weather and the encroaching glaciers in the Northwest shattering the interstate systems through the passes, it isolated four states in the Northwest, and they saw it as a natural move towards secession. So they separated their economies, because all four of these states were suffering huge losses to the federal government, trying to bail out the Federal Reserve. So they decided to hold on to their revenues and officially seceded from the Union and formed their own isolated countries, as it were. And it was almost impossible to put it back together. One of the main reasons that Obama brought the troops back from the Middle East is the National Guards had been completely depleted, not only of equipment, but also of senior manpower. So bringing the troops home from the Middle East gave the federal government the ability to support the states in their movement, unwittingly, in their movement away from being part of the union. They followed more the governor's direction than they did the Washington's direction. And the government didn't really collapse, but it broke apart into bureaucracies. And we're going to explain this schism that occurred because of energy. And it's very interesting how this occurred.
That's quite fascinating. I don't want to take up too much of your time. Let's go over 2010, 2011. Here's what I see. I see the New World Order coming to power, doing 210 to 211. A world leader will be elected in Rome. I see a world military becoming established. And I see Planet X becoming visible to the naked eye. Do you have any comments?
Almost all of those occurred. They did really try to establish a one-world government. The problem was enforcement. They couldn't agree on enforcement and distribution of the tax revenues. So it didn't happen. They couldn't organize it. The weather and lack of energy is what stopped the global elite from taking over the world. Now, the discovery of the NORAD missions to Mars and the Moon is what really took the wind out of their sails, because it appeared from the efforts that were being made that they were actually trying to make an elite exodus from the surface of the Earth and allow nature to take its course, and then they were going to come back and move in and take everything over. At least in 2015, that has not occurred yet.
Wow. In 211 to 212, what I see is that the Earth will move into the galactic plane and we'll see tremendous solar flares. Also, the gravitational effect of the dark star, or the Planet X, will cause an ecological crisis, from tidal waves and earthquakes. The world government will go into its underground bases, and there'll be some sort of massive ET UFO contact event. The pole shift will occur. The world sea level will rise some 670 feet, and there'll be a world population reduction of 1.2 billion. What do you see for 11 and 12?
Well, the upheavals of the ocean are occurring as in your time. Prior to the year 2005, rogue waves, these are nearly supersonic vibrations that go through the ocean, but in deep water they only make a swell. As they get to shallower water, 2,000 feet deep or less, they actually come to the surface and have been known to capsize small fleets. But they don't occur very often, maybe once or twice a year, but by 2010, they're occurring almost twice a month. And unfortunately for the coastal cities, they begin to occur perpendicular to the major coasts. And so what we're beginning to see, and this first made the news, as you correctly predicted, in early 2012, well before December. It was just prior to the hurricane season of September 2012. Rogue waves, they were called the equivalent of clear sky turbulence. Clear skies, no wind, no clouds, no evidence of a storm whatsoever, no earthquakes, and a 150-foot tidal wave hits the shore going 600 miles an hour. It devastated some cities, especially in Florida.
Wow. Great show. Hey, I'm going to listen on the Internet. Thanks a lot. I hope to talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you very much, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We are going to take a break here in just a second so that we can take care of some commercial business. Actually, we're not going to do any commercials because we don't need it. The commercials in this time, it doesn't really matter to us if you spend any money on with our sponsors or not, because it just isn't important to us tonight. So what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to just play a little bit of music during the break and let you relax for about 2 or 3 minutes and let you go ahead and get something to drink or eat and make your way back to the radio. and we'll see you in about 55, let's see, in about 6 minutes. So here we go. Squared Radio, coming to you live January 11th, 2015, from a bungalow in southern Idaho. Snow on the ground, ice in the air. As we were mentioning in the first hour of the program, we were able to come back to you through the use of a beryllium ion modem from the year 2015 to the year 2009, January 11th, to try to provide you with some news of your future, our past, so that perhaps you can help us take a different path, a different route, to a different future line. And maybe we can avert the events of 2015. We were discussing the condition of the Midwest after the brutal winter of 2009. It produced so much snow and Arctic temperatures in Canada and the Northwest that the snow did not melt in the summer. The amount of energy reflected back out into space reduced the temperature of the Earth by a full degree Celsius in 2 years. Now, that being said, as we neared the galactic plane, there were heavy gravitational pulses, and there were influences upon the sun, which, after many, many months with almost no sunspots, began to pass into solar maximum 24, cycle 24. And the gravitational pull was so strong that it literally pulled solar flares from the sun hundreds of thousands of miles out into space. And the particle acceleration and magnification and focus upon the Earth was devastating, creating solar storm floods where the tops of glaciers and high mountain snowfall melted so fast that they flash flooded down into the passes right where the interstate systems were. And then in a matter of days, refroze meters thick and began flowing like an ice river, like glaciers, churning and twisting. They shattered the interstate system through the Rockies, the Cascades, the Trinities, and on up into Canada. The energy requirements were also taxed as the gravitational pulses took their toll on deep space satellite systems, and then geosynchronous satellite systems, and the energy systems could not communicate one with another, and the national energy grid failed, so only local energy was available. The energy needed to keep industry going came from coal at first. That was the low-hanging fruit, but it put states like Kentucky and Montana in an unusual position of national power. The Department of the Interior had outlawed logging in the late 1990s. Then Clinton nationalized two of the nation's largest coal reserves, which eventually left America without a way to make electricity. Farmers. It was farmers who had been on CRP, which is an agricultural welfare program, revolted and began growing oil seeds for biodiesel in violation of federal laws. The Department of Energy refused to fund the movement by not allowing land or equipment to be used as collateral. But officials in the USDA saw a way to save the country and decided to act. Teaming with two of the nation's largest banks, which were still reeling from the government's hostile takeover attempt, they sensed a way to make a return on their investment. This formed a sort of schism between bureaucracies who faced being defunded and dissolved if they could not become self-supporting. Even the self-supporting government agencies had their accounts robbed by politicians to fund their re-elections and appointments to powerful committees. With cash being outlawed, there was simply no possible way for new resources of energy to reach any sort of level resembling public access. The acceptance of nearly a billion acres of privately owned land into the bioenergy industry nearly saved the world. I cannot stress enough the importance of this piece of news. This effort failed by 2015, but we desperately need this to succeed. Without public support of alternative energy efforts, cities began to dissolve into anarchy. At first, there were only a few skirmishes and looting broke out, and after a month or so, the migrations began. Groups began organizing and attempting to move into the mountains or out onto the plains to try to survive off the land. The National Guard, in late 2009, was now fortified by the return of the troops in the Middle East. They stopped all travel on the interstate highways except for official government business. However, the National Guards do answer to the governors of each state. And so this schism widened as alternative energy providers were successful in providing energy to their states. And so the governors facilitated and the governors helped because their own states were surviving off of things like cellulosic ethanol, biodiesel, biokerosene, biojet fuel, all grown by local farmers. Now we know it was possible all along to provide all the clean burning energy necessary to support our towns, our cities, and individual needs right in our own soil. There was no need for drilling, new oil reserves, nuclear power plants, or the burning of coal to make electricity. It was there all along, and all it would have taken was the team effort between farmers who are currently, in your time, being paid not to farm, and a few million small contributors to make it happen. It sounds simple in hindsight, so when the ability to communicate with you tonight from your future was made possible, we had to mention this vital assignment to you. Know this and listen carefully. The technology to save the country and even the human race from failure is already known, and it is in use on a small scale. We need this technology to be spread as far and wide as possible in the next 4 years, or the human race will not survive. There is nothing more important for you to do with the next few hours following this broadcast. You must follow these instructions immediately and stay focused. By the time the events revealed to you from the future tonight actually occur, it will be too late to reverse course. Listen to all 3 hours and then share this broadcast with your friends and implore them to do the same, and on, the survival of the human race on Earth depends upon it. It might be difficult for you to put all the pieces together tonight, but we are trying so that you can understand what happened. It is vital that you understand what happened so you can change course in time. We tried to tell you about this before, but there was no venue through which to reach you. In 1996, the ability to network to the world didn't exist. By 2006, it looked promising. But by 2009, the work we had done with alternative energy finally began to be recognized. Once the public was aware that energy could come from other sources besides petroleum, coal, or nuclear, there was a narrow window of opportunity to be successful. Please do not pass up this chance. By the middle of 2009, the idea that planet Earth might actually be in, you know, some form of living being was widely known, although not accepted by many. The actions of mankind upon her and within her were having an effect, whether it was the effects of the gravity plane from the center of the galaxy or not is not exactly clear to us now, but it seemed that the Earth itself was having an allergic reaction. Hundreds of small earthquakes at Yellowstone National Park in the first few weeks of 2009 were an unsettling reminder for some people that underneath the park's famous geysers and majestic scenery lurks one of the world's biggest volcanoes. In the ancient past, the volcano had erupted thousands of times more powerfully than the 1980 blast at Mount St. Helens, hurling ash as far away as Louisiana. No eruption that big had allegedly occurred while humans walked the Earth. However, although geologists claimed even a minor lava flow was extremely unlikely, the first release of pressure occurred in the summer of 2009. The park was closed. Attempts to keep photo seekers out of the park, however, failed. The actual second eruption occurred on November 10th, 2009. The crater left behind would have been visible from space, but the weather satellites were not capable of seeing through the ash in the upper atmosphere. Reporters argued over how many degrees the Earth cooled as a result, but the loss of corn production in the spring of 2010 exhausted corn reserves. The fear over the possibility of another eruption was curious. At first, the quarantine was accepted by everyone. Roads were inaccessible. Only those who could walk or ride horses could make it into the area. The government issued warnings not to enter the park, but people did it anyway. Reports of gold, diamonds, and other valuables began coming out, but were discredited by government officials. The real effects were not realized until the beginning of the winter of 2009 and the winter of 2010. The band of ash in the upper atmosphere blocked the sun in the northern hemisphere. This allowed it to snow beyond all records in Canada. There were other effects from the gravity waves coming from the center of the galaxy. The jet stream changed course to bring more Arctic air to the south, and weather began changing. The Gulf Stream and the oceans began rerouting due to the thermal changes in the upper atmosphere. The change of salinity in the ocean changed the amount of energy that the ocean could hold from the sun, and the ocean began to warm. At first, it was seen as a windfall. Fishermen, lobsters, shrimp were at all-time record crops, hauls, and harvests. And then they realized what was happening. Plankton were blooming in the water, allowing the fish to feed unchecked. Although fishermen enjoyed the catch, the schools began migrating deeper and deeper and further out into the ocean. The Gulf Stream, once 60 to 90 miles off the coast of North America, drifted over 200 miles out into sea, making it almost impossible to financially procure fish to feed the coast. Although the oceanic levels didn't change much, the vibrations in the seas and oceans began to change. Rogue waves made it almost impossible to travel transatlantically from coast to coast. Capsizing of ocean liners, supertankers, barges, almost a regular occurrence. Insurance was impossible to get. No company was willing to take the risk. Shipping lanes had to be changed. The design of ships had to change. There was just not enough time. The Earth is now on the brink of entering another ice age. According to a large and compelling body of evidence from within the field of climate science, many sources of data which provide our knowledge base of long-term climate change indicate that the warm 12,000-year-long Holocene period will be coming to an end, and the Earth will return to ice age conditions for the next 100,000 years. It is critical that in 2009 you listen and heed this warning and try to get prepared for what is to come. Listening to the early universe has also just got harder. In your day, a team led by Alan Kogut of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, announced the discovery of cosmic radio noise that booms 6 times louder than expected. The finding came from a balloon-borne instrument named Arcade, which stands for the Absolute Radiometer for Cosmology, Astrophysics, and Diffuse Emission. In July of 2006, we remember, the instrument launched from NASA's Columbia Scientific Balloon Facility in Palestine, Texas. It flew to an altitude of 120,000 feet, where the atmosphere thins into the vacuum of space. Kogut reported that the universe really threw us for a curve. Instead of the faint signal we hoped to find, here was the booming noise, 6 times louder than anyone had predicted. Detailed analysis ruled out an origin from primordial stars or from known radio sources, including gas in the outermost halo of our own Milky Way galaxy. The source of this cosmic radio background remains a mystery even today. Who knows what is making that radio noise? Perhaps as we get closer to the galactic plane, this is the signal that may activate things on our planet we don't understand yet. As the DNA code in our body languishes due to lack of use, the switches in that code are beginning to turn on. As those capabilities activate, the race of mankind will begin to evolve again. In 2009, those abilities are already showing up. You'll recall in 2006, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, also known as PGD. It involves taking a cell from an embryo at the 8-cell stage of development when it is around 3 days old and testing it. By 2010, fetuses began showing up without the cancer gene. Everybody carries a version of these genes. In fact, a properly functioning BRCA1 protein helps stop cancer before it starts. But some particular variations of the genes greatly increase the risk of cancer. Everyone has this gene. Even though carrying the gene doesn't make cancer inevitable, and there is also a chance the disease could be cured if caught early enough, the absence or spontaneous mutation of this gene was one of the first major evolutionary changes in the human race in more than 20,000 years. The last time the Earth was in this spot of the galaxy. There is a plan we want you to undertake. It is clear now, in our day, that genetic switches began turning on in late 2008, early 2009. We need you to spend time learning how to meditate. We want you to understand that the accumulations of things and money and power in this world are not the purpose of life. We want you to understand that the next social evolution for mankind is to learn to live as earthlings. Learn to live with the resources of the earth, the solar system, and the galaxy to create a means by which we can rejoin the community of sentient beings in the universe. We only get this chance once every 26,000 years. We didn't make it in 2015. We're living primitively again, with only pockets of technology that will soon be lost for many generations as equipment wears out and breaks down. But it does not have to be this way. We can ascend the need for wealth if we learn to live together, to control our breathing to levels that the earth can sustain, and understand that we are eternal beings having a mortal experience. So in the final 20 minutes of this hour, we want you to carefully make some notes. There are some things physically that you can do to prepare for the next 4 years. If you try to make these preparations at the end of the 4 years, you will not be able to do so. These preparations need to be made slowly, deliberately, carefully. You need to plan. Events are going to happen in your day, to you, in your community, that will change the way you live. Everything is going to change. The air is going to change. The sea is going to change. The land is going to change. And the very sky you see above you is going to change. You are not built to withstand that change. You don't have a thick fur coat. You don't have bones that can withstand walking for hundreds of miles a month. You can't migrate. You can't dig in solid stone or dirt with your hands. You need tools. You need resources. And you also can't go a month or even a week without eating. So here's what we want you to do. Carefully. Slowly and without alarm, you need to stock up on food and water, enough for 3 to 4 months. Make sure the quantities can be carried by hand. Don't go buy 55-gallon drums of beans. You'll be leaving it behind. You won't have a vehicle. Make sure you have several pairs of shoes. They won't be making any for a while. Make sure that you have a place away from the coast to go. We're not talking about mass evacuation of the coasts, but those listening to this program need to pay attention. things are happening in our solar system, not just this earth. I'll give you a piece of this. Saturn is changing its rotation. I know, it sounds crazy. But a new estimate of how Saturn spins has been made using magnetic data from NASA's Cassini spacecraft. It won't last much longer. But it is not the answer scientists were expecting. As a gas giant, Saturn's rotation has been historically difficult to measure. Its hazy atmospheric features shift with respect to each other, and it really can't be used to clock the spin rate of the planet's interior. The most commonly cited figure for Saturn's rotation period, 10 hours, 39 minutes, and 22.4 seconds, was derived in 1980 from Voyager observations of radio waves generated by solar radiation hitting the planet's atmosphere. It's exactly the way a radar detector works on your car. When law enforcement shoots you with a radar signal, those photons strike your vehicle, go back to the detector, and they can tell your speed to a fraction of a mile per hour. Yet Cassini has returned a result almost 8 minutes longer, a difference that defies easy explanation. The knowledge of the rotation period is a very important ingredient when you try to model the interior of a planet like Saturn. Nobody in their right mind could think the rotation rate of Saturn has changed so much in such a short period of time. This came from Donald Gurnett, principal investigator for the Cassini Radio and Plasma Wave Science Instrument at the University of Iowa. Such a dramatic change in a planet of Saturn's size would require enormous energy. If such a force was being exerted, it would have long ago slowed the planet's rotation rate down to a snail's pace. One possible explanation is that the electrically charged ionosphere surrounding Saturn is slipping relative to the planet's rotation. This ionosphere influences the shape of the magnetic field, so a change in the friction between the ionosphere and upper atmosphere, due perhaps to seasonal variations in solar illumination, might account for the difference between the Voyager and Cassini data. However, Gurnett says it is absolutely not an instrumental error. We now know, in 2015, that the planet Saturn actually was slowing rotation due to massive gravitational influences on the plane of dark matter and dark energy from the center of the galaxy. All you have to do is listen to the facts of what we're trying to bring back to you tonight, and you will see everything that you see, everything that you now consider constant, is about to change. We want you to be prepared. When Yellowstone goes through its change and all that matter gets pushed up into the upper atmosphere, the particles are going to block the sun's rays. The Earth is going to cool rapidly. This is going to change the Midwest all the way down to the border of Kentucky and Tennessee. You have already seen the evidences of the financial crisis that we have historically brought back to you tonight. All of those reports are true. once you start seeing these things hit the news and you start reading about these things in your papers and your online news sources, it will already be in motion. So what can we do as a human race? Sure, we can get a little bit of food together. I can get some old shoes out of the attic. I can pick up some MREs cheap because they're going to be on the market in huge amounts as we scale down the Middle Eastern effort. I can pick up an extra parka, some snow pants, a duffel bag, rolling luggage. I can pick up all that stuff so I can become a human handcart, so to speak, to migrate somewhere, anywhere, higher ground, wherever. Sure, I can do that. But it's not enough. The migrations out of the cities will not be allowed. It must be done slowly, carefully, without alarm. And it must be done with deliberately, with planning and thinking. That's why we need you to learn to meditate. Because you have to learn to listen to the universe. You have to learn to listen to the facts being presented to you so you can make a decision if you want to be part of the future of the human race or not. There's more to it than that. There are more preparations besides the physical ones. There's also a mental preparation. There is a requirement that you are able to sit down and think about where you see yourself in 5 years, given the events that we've presented to you tonight. I want to make sure that you know all phone lines are open. If you have any concerns, any questions whatsoever, I know you're interested in what's going on in the future. You want to know so you can make stock investments, whatever. I understand that. But that's not why we came back here tonight. We came back here tonight because we need to awaken and prepare 64 beings. Because those 64 will tell another 64, and so on and so forth. And every time we work the calculations, those 64 beings are the right start, the right mathematical base, so that we reach a critical mass of consciousness, of awareness, so that we as a race are able to walk to a new plane. Now, as the galactic plane is approached, and all the writings and predictions and prophecies of the ancient civilizations, some of them are Christian, some of them are Egyptian, some of them Mayan, Toltec, Zapotec, Olmec. All of these predictions are falling into place. Those things that these ancient civilizations were shown and felt the compassion to record in stone, in metal, in paper, in clay, so that you, here, in this century, in this time, as we approach this region of the galaxy, would be informed enough to be able to take action. All we're asking you to do on a consciousness level is begin to think about what it is you could become, what it is the human race could become. Think back when you were 8 years old, what you thought was so important. By the time you were 12, the things that you thought were important when you were 8 were almost meaningless. The dreams you had, the careers you had chosen, the toys that you wanted, the movies you wanted to see, all changed. We have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hi, Dr. Agnew. This is Scott. I'm calling from Daytona Beach, Florida.
Hi, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. From what you're saying, it sounds like either leave Florida altogether or move toward the center of the state? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, if you're asking for a safe region to move to, I would definitely recommend, given the history that I know, to move away from the coast. Roughly 80% of the population of the United States lives within 30 miles of a coast. So that would be a heck of a move.
Okay. In terms of being a social worker, you mentioned service jobs will probably not be needed, or that they will perhaps not be valued. I don't know. Would that be, is that something that will continue to be needed in the future?
Well, not to parse words, but those kinds of positions will be desperately needed, as, you know, we study sociology and we try to administer sociological things, at least, and try to make a living at it, but it's typically a municipal employment. When I say that those skills will be desperately needed is an absolute understatement, because when society changes and the supports and the mores that we rely upon change, experts in knowing what those changes could be and how to measure them will desperately be needed. However, I share your concern that remunerating a paycheck for it might not be a reality. It doesn't mean that you have to learn to fix cars or fix roads or build houses, but it does mean that you may need to rethink how it is you value what you do. Do you value it by the dollars you make, or do you value it by the lives that you help?
Lives that I help.
Exactly. And that's what we're asking. This shift in consciousness is away from what our sociology has guided us toward. That is to say, you deserve a Cadillac, or, you know, make sure you put away in your 401k so that you can retire in your golden years on a golf course or wherever it is you wish to languish in leisure and opulence. That shift is what I'm talking about, a shift toward the value of the consciousness applied to the human condition. And you are in an optimum position to take advantage of that.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the phone call, Scott.
Night.
Good night. So when I say, you know, as Scott was mentioning, and I'm sure he's listening offline, it is important that we realize that we interact as sentient beings, one with another, not taking advantage of one another, selling and buying from one another, and certainly not harming one another. But there is an interaction that occurs, not so much maybe in the cities, you'd think crowded, you know, around people all the time, but actually people feel isolated in cities. More in the country environments or small town environments, and I'll talk about that strain in just a moment. But people have a tendency not to know their neighbors. They really don't know the people that are teaching their children, for instance. They don't know who their sons or daughters are dating particularly. And frankly, it seems they don't care. All they really care about is, what can I do for me right now? And this is the shift. This is the shift in consciousness that we're talking about. And there are strains on this both ways. In the large cities, there is a fear, and there's also an anonymity that you enjoy. Sort of like talking about private things on a city bus. It's probably one of the most secure places in the world to speak, because nobody would dare invade your space and overhear and take part in what you're doing. They don't care what your name is. They won't even meet you eye to eye. In small towns, it's just as bad, because everything you did from the time you were 3 years old to the time you accidentally wet your pants in the second grade, it's known in a small town. It never goes away. When a stranger comes to town, you don't dare look them in the eye, because somebody might see you looking them in the eye, and the rumors begin. You live in a small town, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's an allergic reaction to this. There is a social disconnection that occurs because of this. Actually, what happens, what really brings people together, you would think is exactly what would tear them apart. It doesn't. And that is the shared experience. Whether it's war, or an avalanche, or a fire, or a tornado, or extreme poverty, crime did not increase during the Depression. People pulled together because they experienced it together. When there's a massive earthquake, yeah, there's a little bit of looting, people that take advantage of that. But most people pull together. Most people feel closer to their neighbors. Hey, I didn't even know your name. And this earthquake happened and shattered my house and your house, and now we're out in each other's yards picking up trash and sharing milk and cookies. How are you? That shift in consciousness is what is occurring now. And it's not just being facilitated by this social change. It is not necessarily facilitated because of financial collapse or that once immovable equity in the land or home that you owned or the 401k that you enjoyed watching go up, up, up all those years and now is worth 20% of what it once was. Or that life insurance that you had invested in all those years, and now there's no insurance company to back it. Or that company for whom you worked for 25 years in hopes of getting a pension only to see the notice of bankruptcy in the mail. These are not the things of value. These are not the things that make life valuable. It is the interaction of one spirit with another. It is the care and the healing between one spirit and another. That is how you grow. That is how you learn. That is how the human race changes. However, it is now being facilitated by an even greater influence. One might say the church. One might say God, the spirit of is pouring out upon the earth, and those who are in tune with the Spirit are picking up upon it and are reaping the knowledge and comfort that they have been promised by their ecclesiastical leaders. An even greater group spanning over centuries, millennia, realize it might be something else. We have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hello, this is Heather calling from the San Francisco Bay Area. Greetings.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
I'm so very much enjoying your show. Lots of good information.
Thought
I would bring something up that's come to my attention lately through synchronicity is there are some resources on the internet for what they're calling now intentional or conscious communities.
Yeah.
Where people are getting together and, you know, having their property and living in harmony with nature and coming up with technology that'll, you know, kind of get us away from relying on the government systems. And there's popping up quite a few resources out there, and I just thought I would pass that on and offer that to the listeners.
Well, you know, that kind of those kinds of resources are very rare, and I'm glad to see that they're popping up on the internet, and hopefully they do a much better job of publicity, because I know that we here are greatly concerned about the future of alternative energy. We know that there are sources of technology out there in garages and attics and extra rooms and sheds out back, and a lot of these are retired engineers or they're laid off engineers or they're not engineers at all. They've just received an idea and a dream and followed it through and built a prototype. This kind of technology is going to desperately be needed by the populace of Earth. And I can tell you, at least in this day, in the year 2015, it's pretty evident governments really do not want this alternative energy to be proliferated in a big way. But we, the people, the public, want it terribly.
Yeah, and I think, unfortunately, the people who are expecting Obama and this new administration to vote, you know, to this area are going to be in for a little bit of a disappointment.
Well, you know,
I would pass that.
Do you have a website that that you want to share with us, this privacy?
No, I just went online last week and Googled intentional communities. There's a couple of websites, conscious communities. There is a Global Awakening, which has got a, they've got a book coming out on creating these communities. I think it's the Global Oneness Project. And they have a forum where people can share ideas, and they've got I think it's called a new Awakened Community, a book. I haven't received it yet. I just ordered it. But, you know, they're encouraging us to get like-minded people to get together. And I think this will become more more prevalent, I think, as we move forward and people, you know, really wake up and see the light.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. There is...
Yeah.
You know, it's undeniable that there is something that is connecting with people. You know, you say, we went to different schools together. That's pretty much what's happening. People are learning, through these, for lack of a better word, let's call it a download. And then they're realizing that other people are getting this download as well. And these communities are coming together just exactly like you're talking about.
Yeah, and I think there's power in numbers. I think, you know, part of us wants to say, well, let's just go live out in the wilderness on our own. But, you know, I think these communities are bringing people with different types of skills, you know, healers and, you know, construction people and maybe people who know how to work on cars and, you know, maybe having a shaman there would be helpful too. But it's just quite amazing what we're doing is to find a solution to the problem and not rely on the government anymore.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. I am thoroughly convinced that when people talk about the government, that there really isn't such a thing. There's a loose coalition of bureaucracies and nothing more. It is a convenience of sharing the national checkbook.
So I'm going to get off the air and let someone else call in if they'd like and listen to the rest of your lovely show and have a great week. And I think we're in for quite a wild ride this year.
I think so, too. Thank you so much for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So there you have it, Earth Explorers, listeners all over the world feeling that there is this common awakening, this what she called a global awakening, a global oneness, this interconnected community of like-minded people. This is what is occurring all around the world in small pockets, and what we need is for this to really gain momentum much, much quicker than it is in our day. And hopefully coming back at this time to share this with you is allowing that to become a reality. And what we're going to do now, because we're getting ready to enter the third hour of the program, and we're going to talk about entering the galactic plane, what's that doing to the human DNA, and we will definitely take more phone calls. Again, no commercials are necessary. We're just going to continue with keeping you all together, awake, and enjoying the new year. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio. Thank you. 2015 in a bungalow in southern Idaho. The last 2 hours we have tried to bring back to you the conditions, history, that led up to the events of 2015 so that you might become more prepared, more centered, more focused in 2009 toward a new awakening, a new awareness, an evolutionary shift in human consciousness. We live in a time treasured by all the scientific imaginations and hoped for by all the ancient historians. To deny this is to avoid the global enlightenment we speak about. The ancients left us signs, symbols, and even writings to prepare us. The galactic community has been here for hundreds of centuries, trying to help our colony mature to the point we can join them as the explorers we were meant to be. Can we fail? Yes, we can. There are forces on the Earth determined to destroy us. Up until now, our mission may have been unclear. Traditionally, we peaceful people have always fled to the wilderness. We have sacrificed ourselves to blaze trails through the frontiers of deserts, mountains, and perhaps even into space to enjoy peace and freedom. Well, now the wilderness is no more. Darkness has come to us and threatens to consume us or enslave us. Secretly and openly, we pray that their hearts will be changed or that they will magically go away. History tells us, however, that they do not just go away. The more we pray and appease, the more we will lose to them. But we are not a people of force. We are merciful and quick to forgive. So what can we do to transform the earth? Well, darkness has an allergy. Light. If we are enlightened or say that we are children of the light, then perhaps our mission is to help flood the earth with light. In the light, freedom can prosper. In the light, liberty and peace can flourish. We are trans-dimensional beings quite capable of visualizing the smallest quantum and the birth of new solar systems. Our astral bodies can move through space and time, but we need to remember how. We need to awaken the capabilities left for us in our DNA by the designer. In other words, it is time for the human race to transcend its instincts. It is time for us to trust our wings and take flight. It is time for us to realize that there is more than enough for everyone on this planet, and that our potential is unlimited. This is how we want to begin this year. We bring this information back to you because it is of vital importance. I cannot stress enough the importance of this piece of news. The effort to save the world, to provide energy for a world in desperate need of heat and electricity and the ability to perform work, failed by the year 2015. We desperately need this to succeed. As I said in the first hour, without public support of alternative energy efforts, cities by the year 2015 began to dissolve into anarchy. At first, there were only a few skirmishes and looting broke out. After a month or so, the migrations began. But groups began organizing and attempted to move into the mountains or out onto the plains to try to survive off the land. But the National Guard, now fortified by the return of the troops in the Middle East, stopped all travel on the interstate highways, except for government business. And as we reported to you before, the interstate highways through the mountain passes were destroyed by glacial rivers that formed after rapid freezing of the mountains and lack of thawing in the summer months. These energy methods exist out there in your towns, in your hamlets, in your cities. We need you to seek them out and help them survive. They must be able to provide the districts of this country and other countries with enough energy to survive a cold winter, with enough energy to plant the soil with crops, with enough energy to do the mechanical work that needs to be done. If that does not happen, then we're going to revert, as we are in the year 2015, back to a primitive race, and it will be another 20,000 years before we can make a move. So it is important that you understand this, that you hear this, and that you take action. We need you to understand that what you do and who you are is immensely valuable to this planet. No matter how insignificant or ignominious you rank yourself, nothing could be further from the truth. Your presence here was a matter of design, your design. Your life condition is a matter of your design and your efforts. Planning for a future far away that involves retirement or somehow withdrawing from the participation in the human condition is something we're trying to steer you away from with this report. It's important that you realize who you are, why you are here, and what it is you are capable of doing. We want you to remember back when you were young, childlike, open, creative, passionate. You had an idea, you had a dream, you had a vision of what it is you wanted to be, what it is you wanted to do. And somewhere along the way, you got caught up in what it is you want to have. That's the shift in consciousness that is necessary. Learn tonight that seeking after the having is not the motivation for the human condition. It is seeking after the doing and seeking after the being. The having will take care of itself. Oh, you might not end up with that Ferrari, and you might not end up with that 10,000 square foot house on the edge of the ocean with a golf course at your back door. What we're saying is that if you concentrate on the being and the doing, that won't matter. Shifting away from the idea that you must stand upon the finished sandcastle in order to succeed at life is a mistake. Realizing that kneeling before the sandcastle with shovel and bucket in hand, sweat on the brow and satisfaction in the structuring is the goal. The journey is the goal. The process is the goal. That is the purpose of life. We were talking at the end of the last hour and trying to make you aware that something is happening in this neck of the galaxy. As the planet oscillates up and down and travels through the galactic zodiac, the imaginary line drawn through the north and south pole of the Earth extends infinitely out into space and draws a circle in the heavens. That circle is known as the precession of the equinoxes. On December 21st, 2012, just before Christmas, we will be not only experiencing a solar maximum, but we will be experiencing planetary rotational changes, not just of Earth. We also talk tonight about planetary rotational changes, and not of a few microseconds, of many minutes, and a change from 1980 until now in the planet Saturn. It's true. Planetary rotations are changing because the gravitational fabric of our neck of the galaxy is changing. It's a green light. It's an indicator, a needle that's showing us something is occurring in this region of space. We talked about a radio noise 6 times larger than radio astronomers expected to find. Unexplained. No source can be identified for it. Completely unexpected. These frequencies, those that we are measuring and those we cannot measure, are having their effect. The effect on human DNA is already being made evident in your year of 2009. By 2015, the stratification of the race is becoming even more evident. Not just in new births, no, no, also in existing organisms, including humans. Capabilities, long since dormant or never awakened because we have not been of a human condition for them to take root, are now becoming a reality. Does it mean you're going to sprout wings and be able to jump from the cliffs in graceful flight? Perhaps not. Will it mean that you'll be able to communicate one with another telepathically, emotionally, instantly across space and time? Perhaps. That communication in historical and religious writings has often been called prayer, has often been called revelation. We now, in modern terms, call that a download, or we call it a vision or an inspiration. Many scientists, Tesla, Edison, many mathematicians, Chandrasekhar, Riemann, Gödel, Escher, Bach, all talked about whole information being poured into their minds where they were prepared to receive it, decipher it, and produce with it. The Tibetans in the 7th century built stupas that were structurally identical to Tesla coils built 1,500 years later. All we can tell you is that these things are a reality. These frequencies are permeating through our universe, through our galaxy now, and they're coming through our heliosphere, and they're coming into our solar system, and they're coming through our atmosphere. And those who are in tune, those who will pay attention, those who have been awakened, might realize what is happening and take advantage of it and grow with it. And the human race will evolve. The reason we came back to you this night, at great risk, is so that you can listen to what we have said to you tonight and share it with a friend and tell them to share it with a friend. We need millions and millions of people to hear what you have heard tonight. By the time you see the evidences of the news that we have given you tonight, it may be too late. The things that we have described to you tonight, from financial deals behind closed doors, governmental takeovers of banks and insurance companies, rearrangements of currency and methods of communication, lines of leadership, are all true and factual. None of this has been made up. The names are real, and they have not been changed to protect anyone. You have the truth. Go back and listen to it. Read your news for yourself. Today, next Sunday, next month, you'll see the names. You'll see the things that we said to you tonight are true and factual, and they are taking place as we speak to you tonight. Everything that you see as stable and reliable and secure for your future is going to change. Does it mean it's going to disappear? No. It is going to change. You're going to have to adapt in order to consume and produce in this future. And this awareness is not to give you fear, but to give you peace, because you won't be surprised. When I was very young and the oceans were clean, I used to surf. Extremely relaxing and a challenging way to involve yourself in the rhythms of the earth. Sitting out there on that board in the water, you learn to listen. You learn to read the waves. You learn to conserve energy. And you learn to time the rhythm of the earth. And there's a very important analogy I want you to pay attention to. After a while, you figure out that there are certain signs, certain indications that you have when a great wave is coming. And after all, isn't that the real goal of being in the water? Sure, it's nice to be in the water. It's nice to be out there with friends and talking and looking back at the sand with all those who are afraid to mount the fiberglass rocket you are about to ride. But it's even more fun to ride that perfect wave. If you paddle too late, you miss it. If you paddle too soon, you exhaust yourself and are crushed by the crashing wave behind you and over you. Timing must be perfect. How do you know? How do you tell? When the undertow is pulling hard. When you can feel in your feet and in your swimming that the ocean is inhaling. It's beginning to pull at the shore and pull at your board. And right at the moment when you think all is lost and you will never make it back to shore, you look over your shoulder and there she is, glistening in the sun, smooth and blue. And you paddle a few strokes and you mount and ride an amazing liquid hill that forms under your feet. And you ride something akin to hydrological music to the shore. Life is like that. When you lose your job and your car breaks down and all that money you saved up in the bank disappears and you think all is lost, look around behind you because there's a wave coming. And all it will take is a few confident strokes, and you'll catch her and ride her to perfection. And she will enjoy taking you. Don't lose hope. It is important for you not to lose hope. I'm not trying to command you or give you any special marching orders, but I am trying to inspire you and let you know that those things to which you may have anchored your security may not be secure. It's not supposed to be secure. You are an eternal being having a mortal experience, and you are moving through space-time like an amazing intelligence. Not only absorbing the universe and learning from her, but you are affecting her as well. Your consciousness adds to the billions of other consciousnesses, not just human, on this planet and in this solar system and in this galaxy and in this universe. And the sum total of the intention of those sentient beings is what makes the universe what it is. If one of you leaves, the whole universe will collapse and have to be rebuilt. Whether you're having a great experience or not, whether you are healthy or handicapped or even dying, you are affecting the universe by your consciousness. The dignity and the confidence and the experience that you are involved in right now is important, immensely important to the condition of the universe. How you react to that is even more important. We have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
My name is Bob. I'm calling from Lake Forest, California.
Hi, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Hi, it's a pleasure to talk with you tonight, Doctor.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I have a question that's very good. I'm a little nervous, though.
Please don't.
I was wondering about your expedition this summer. I'm going to put together a DVD, and I was wondering if you still have some openings. I really would like to go on that trip with you guys.
You know, everything is open. Yes, we've had, you know, thousands of applicants for 100 spaces, but as I've tried to impress upon people, this expedition has remarkably constraining guidelines. We could put together a team of experts or a team of wealthy tourists and go and come back and make probably a decent film. That's not the goal. The goal is to put together a group with the right consciousness and put them in the right place on the planet at the right time. And I'm going to say maybe the right time hasn't come so far, even though, you know, we've been trying to do this. Stephen Curry tried to do it back in 2005 and 2006, and we've been trying to since then. And it is a combination of effects that has made it happen or not happen. But this year, it's gained quite a bit of momentum. The joint venture with the charter company took care of half the cost of the voyage. That was a major step. they're excited about the trip to the Arctic Circle where the ocean has opened up. So I'm going to say that only a few of the spaces have been taken. And they're just essential people only. And we're talking about some leadership, not much, a few filmmakers, key directors, and, of course, some key scientists. Of course, Jill Heinert, the under-ice diver and photographer from National Geographic, and some others. But largely, I would say over half the positions remain unfilled. And that's partly because... Yeah, it's partly because we haven't sat down as a board and said, okay, this person, that person, because it is a time. Everything will be done in time, but we are getting very, very close. So please do not hesitate to drop your DVD in the mail to us or email the one-minute flash to us. It's fine. And we haven't decided what we're going to do with those yet. We thought about posting them on the website so that others could see who's coming and why they're coming and, you know, feel of their consciousness and their enthusiasm. But we haven't done that yet. We're being very, very careful with the marketing, and we're making sure not to ruffle any official feathers so that we can still make this happen and produce what literally millions of people are waiting for. So please don't hesitate.
I understand. Well, it's all of our... this is an opportunity because we're all changing, and our minds are, and our spirits are changing and are evolving. And I think this is a great time for us to... these next 4 years are going to be tremendous for the whole Earth. And I've been ready for a long time and thinking that the way things are and the way the world run is not correct anyway. And I've been excited by listening to you and to listening to James. And there's just so much exciting information coming out. And I feel like I've been in the dark for like... Now, in the last 2 or 3 years, I've been gathering up information, and I'm just growing with leaps and bounds.
Yeah,
it's amazing, but I know we're in for some big changes.
Do you now? Where is Lake Forest? Is that in Northern California or Southern California?
It's Southern California, Newport Beach.
Oh, Newport
Irvine,
Beach,
California.
Sure. Right, right.
Yes, down in Southern California, and that's where I live. And I had can I ask another question?
Sure.
Now, where would be the safe zones when we start getting into this, the natural catastrophes and various things that are probably going to happen weather-wise, and who knows if anybody's going to let out any nukes or not. But I've done some research on safe zones, and I've been considering, I don't want to run and hide in a hole or something like that, but I have considered, building an underground facility with a house on top. Just for safety and to get through the harsh times, but not for myself, but for many other people. I'd like to have a lot of people there, make it like a family thing. And is that practical, or is that a good idea?
You know, I get that question from a lot of people. And our final book in the trilogy, Unlocking the Secret, my co-author put some information in volume 3 of the Ark of Millions of Years about shelters. Some above ground, some below ground. And there is a mindset that, when the high winds come and the solar flares come, that perhaps being underground might be a safe place to be for a time, because those conditions are going to be temporary, although in regions devastating. I think the greater danger comes from the oceanic upheavals due to either tectonic activity or gravitational wave activity as the Earth is tidally affected by this gravity. And I am not going to build a shelter. I'm going to listen, and I'm going to move to those areas that are going to be least affected and where I can be the most effective in helping people. I would say it's an individual choice. Some people are going to hunker down. They're going to go into the mountains, and they're going to build shelters on the leeward side of a mountain, and they're going to hide there for a while. And you know what? That's okay, too. But I implore most people to be involved in the human condition and not withdraw, because the enlightened, the worst thing that they can do is withdraw from society. The most important thing to do is to be, like most spiritual leaders out there. And you could use Jesus as an example, or Buddha, or any of the other ones. They go out into society and take whatever it is that comes and are ascended in the process.
Well, that's very good advice. I thought about that too. I don't want to, you know, I didn't want to seem like just running away, because being part of everything and the changes is you've got to be out there involved in it.
Sure.
Now, when we talk about the tidal waves and tsunamis, would they could be a 1,000 feet or a couple thousand feet? I mean, how far inland would they come? A couple hundred miles?
Yeah, I would say it would depend on the topography. But if you're looking at, say, the L.A. Basin, I would say that the water will likely splash up against the San Bernardino Mountains. I would say Florida is going to be a sandbar. And I think that the Appalachians are going to get lapped up against. So if you're not, you know, at least 2,000 feet and well inland, you're probably going to have an event. And these tsunamis are not ordinary. They're not 90 feet or 100 feet and, you know, traveling at 80 or 90 miles an hour. We're already experiencing these waves, and they're being called rogue waves, and they're darn near supersonic. But they are deep water, so they don't really gain a lot of height, a lot of amplitude, like a wave would that breaks on shore. But that's because they're moving with the streams, they're moving with the Gulf Stream and with other streams of water. But when they turn, as the tidal gravity begins to pull on the crust of the earth, and these things begin turning somewhat perpendicular to the shore, then we're going to have some tsunami, some clear air tsunami events that are going to change everything.
Okay. I thought the same thing. Was about 2,000 feet. It should be where you should be, about 2,000 feet, I think, to be clear of the flooding.
Well, if you go and look at the upper northwest, when the Lake Missoula used to break the ice dams, I recently watched a film that was taken from a helicopter flying over the region of Lincoln County, which is in eastern Washington state. That helicopter was flying at the level the water came through that region. It was over 1,000 feet high.
That's something we haven't seen in this in our lifetime, but we're going to see it now. I'm pretty sure we will. Have you had any information? I know Zacharias Sitchin has several of his books that I've read about that planet or the star Nibiru. Do you have any belief that that's going to be appearing in the next few, 3 or 4 years? There is some information out there by Bob Dean, who's a sergeant major with NORAD, I think it was, years ago, NATO, and there's other on Project Camelot has a couple of videos that they have interviews with people. If you know anything about that planet coming, you think that'll play a part in any of this?
The only things that I know about it, I've actually heard from other people. I do know that Zacharias Sitchin did a lot of research on this and ostensibly translated some ancient Sanskrit and Sumerian in and learned of the planet Nibiru. I am pretty good friends with John, who has directed and filmed a movie called One Anunnaki, which is the filmed version of Zacharias Sitchin's work. And, you know, John Gress is a great writer. He's a great filmmaker, owns a company called Jaguar Films down there in Florida, and a company called Florida Effects, who has worked with companies like Pixar and Disney and even Star Wars. And I can tell you that there is some credibility to it. It's hard to deny, because of the cosmological teachings that go all the way back to the Babylonian cylinders, which are, you know, 3,200 B.C., these people had knowledge of the outer solar system that they could not have had, because they certainly didn't have telescopes, unless they were taught by someone off-world. So there is some credulity to it, and I have to say I'm a believer.
Well, thank you very much, sir, for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm going to continue to listen on the radio, and when I get some more questions, I'll give you a call. I think it's brilliant that you just gave me the time to talk to me. I really do. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bob, and, you know, put us on speed dial. Call us next Sunday.
I will, and thanks. I hope I get to meet you soon, maybe even on the trip, or I'll just call in sometime. Thank you very much, sir. Good night.
Thank you. And so, Earth Explorers, what we want you to pay attention to is that these geological changes, these oceanographic changes, and even cosmological changes that are taking place are not extinction events, okay? You cannot die. You are eternal beings. Yes, you may shed a mortal body or two, or even 10,000, or 10 million, but you will accumulate experience, and you will accumulate wisdom. One of the reasons that we want you to meditate is that in these states of, and I'm not going to call them relaxation, I'm going to call them states of awareness. I personally have taken all kinds of meditation, and I have found the Merkaba meditation, which is taught by the Flower of Life. If you just want to look that up on the internet, Flower of Life, I'm not trying to plug any particular teacher or any particular school, but I found this kind of meditation to be effective, to be easy to learn. You don't have to be a master of 20 years to get real results. Mastering the techniques of breathing can take some time, but I promise you in 6 weeks you'll be doing it like an expert. The main thing is not to quiet the mind so that nothing is going on up there. That's missing the boat. That's just nothing more than checking out of the mortal condition, in my opinion. Rather than quiet the mind, you awaken the mind. You synchronize the conscious mind with the unconscious mind, one moving at about 20,000 times the rate of the other, and I think you know which one I'm talking about. That synchronization begins to quicken the mortal body. It begins to quicken the mortal consciousness. And you will become aware of things you never saw before. The aura of people, the intention and the presence of what they are saying, and how they're listening to you. And you will also begin to realize that you are actually telepathically communicating with people. I'll give you a small example. I was in a major multi-departmental store the other day. I'm not even going to plug a store name. And I was by myself, and I was shopping, and I had picked up a couple of items in a basket. I was not even pushing a cart. I had less than 6 items. And as I was heading for the checkout counter, I noticed, impulsively, a rack of candy containing a Snickers bar. And as vacant as my mind was, and open to any suggestion, I really thought very strongly that I wanted that Snickers bar. I didn't actually physically reach for it, however. I just all but tasted it and consumed it, but I didn't reach for it. And I went up to the counter and I put my 3 or 4 or 5 items on there. They were small, enough so that I knew pretty much what the total was going to be, somewhere around $5 or something like that. And the lady said, well, that'll be, you know, $6.50. And I thought, I was running the numbers in my head, and I said, $6.50 for these 4 or 5 items? She said, well, didn't you want the Snickers bar? And I said, you rang up the Snickers bar, and I didn't put it on the counter. I didn't pick it up. I realized that I had telepathically implanted the idea of the Snickers bar in her mind, and she actually rang up the cost of the Snickers bar, and it didn't exist. That's when I realized that as this skill of meditation is mastered and practiced over time, you are able to project your thoughts even to the untrained, although the idle mind. Now, I'm not encouraging you to implant thoughts and ideas into other people, but I am telling you that it is a reality that you can communicate very clear thoughts from one person to another when you become adept at these skills. It isn't hard to do. Look it up, Flower of Life Meditation. A couple of books to read, a couple of seminars to attend, and it's over. And you are practicing. So give our friends over there at Flower of Life a phone call. Or drop them an email. They're very easy to find. There's only one school, only one license, although they teach all over the country, and I have found their rates to be amazingly easy to handle, and they will even work with you. So we are beginning your year of 2009, January 11th, and we are trying to come to you from January 11th, 2015, also a Sunday. X Squared Radio trying to stay strong, even by battery power from a bungalow in beneath the frozen tundra of southern Idaho. We want you to stay well. We want you to stay prosperous. But if you do not stay well and prosperous, that's okay too. It is all a human condition, and it is all marvelous. And I can tell you the greatest beings in the universe come here to this earth to have their mortal experience with you. So you are in good company, and you will be well cared for. And we encourage you to care well for others. We here at X Squared Radio would not be here without you, and we have not mentioned any of our sponsors. But we will mention our website. It is x2-radio.com. We do have an online store with a few products that we know very well. I will tell you now officially that we have dropped all of our sponsors from Commission Junction. After these many years, have decided we don't like doing business with them. And we haven't had any great comments from you about them either. So, if you want to advertise with X Squared Radio, it's almost free. Give us a contact, and we'll give you a front page spot where you can reach our listeners all around the world. It's important to us that you have your consciousness awakened, and also that you realize that this is primarily a scientific talk radio program. We talk about the paranormal only because it isn't mainstream. And I can tell you pretty much if it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio. More than 100 hosts, and very shortly going to expand to other media. As we improve our sound and improve our service to you, the listener, because as Socrates once said in the movie The Peaceful Warrior, service is the greatest calling there is, and one is pleased to be of service. Tonight we've tried to bring to you news from your future, our past, so that you can see as these things unfold that we are credible in giving you this information, and that you will be able to take action and leadership and responsibility for your own life condition. Realize there is no destiny for you. There is only results of your energy and your intention. No one controls you. You control you. Every choice you make or don't make affects your life and affects the universe. So now that you're conscious of that, we want you to do that on purpose. With purpose. In process. Not concentrating on the have, but concentrating on the doing and the being, and the have will come by itself. Have a ball. Have a wonderful time. Love as hard as you can. And we're probably going to end just a little bit early tonight. I have said everything that I really wanted to say, and unless you want to call in the next 7.5 minutes, we're going to let the host take back over, and we will prepare you for next week. We're going to try to bring Gary Schwartz back on, and we're going to talk about his book. Our website's x2-radio.com. We will see you next week. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers. Well, I suppose we're off the air now. Are you there, Don? Caller, your first name and where you're calling from. Are you there? Hello, caller. Oh,
Dr. Agnew?
Oh, yes, there you are.
Hi. Yes, this is Nick. I'm calling from Costa Rica.
Oh, hi, Nick. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I've been listening to your program. I caught the last part. I'm above 2,000 feet, so I, other than the huge earthquake we just had, lately, I guess I'm okay.
Yeah, that's right. You just had like a 7 on the Richter scale, didn't you?
Well, 6.2. I live near San Jose. It was a little bit north of here, near Poas Volcano. And there has been a tremendous amount of damage, and some of the poor people, you know, are devastated. So I hope people will try to donate to help them.
Right.
We've had some of the U.S. Helicopters out of the Southern Command have come here to help. They're flying over my house for the last 2 days. So they need all the help they can get. But anyway, what I wanted to say, I know you're talking about the huge tidal waves. So that
yes.
will inundate all of Florida.
Yeah, as the rogue waves and tidal gravity that stretches and pulls on the Earth becomes more intense as we near the galactic plane in our galaxy, the ocean's rogue waves will begin turning perpendicular to the shore. Well, Florida is prime for this because it has deep water to the south toward Cuba. It goes all the way down to close to 6,000 feet. And these rogue waves, as they come through that area, they don't really swell that much. They make the water kind of rough, and they make it hard on ocean liners from time to time. But as they turn toward the shore and they hit that shallow sand, they're going to climb to about 1,000 feet high. And they're almost supersonic. They're well over 500 miles an hour in speed. And as they hit the shore, there just won't be any warning. It'll go from shore to shore across Florida like a Brillo pad.
Do you think the north central part will be fairly safe or no?
Well, I think it will be simply because the deep water is well off the shore. As it comes into the continental shelf there, the swell will probably crescendo and start crashing about 200 miles off the coast. So there'll be a little bit of warning, but the storm surge, and I say storm surge, there won't really even be a storm involved in it. It'll be what we're terming clear air tidal waves. No
right.
earthquake involved.
To change the subject, I haven't heard you talk about the Inner Earth Expedition.
Is that still set for next fall?
Yes. We spoke about it three times tonight. We made a joint venture tentative agreement. That is to say, we haven't signed a permanent contract because the rest of the funding isn't in place yet. But we have a joint venture agreement with the charter company, so about half the cost of the voyage is taken care of, and that's a huge step in the right direction.
Wonderful, because with the economic downturn, I'm hoping that you don't lose support, you know.
Fortunately, people that are involved with us in this are not looking primarily at the financial return. They're looking more for the benefit in consciousness and awareness to the world. And those that are looking for a huge financial return, in some cases we've chosen not to do business with them because their consciousness is
right.
So low. And that's the primary reason why the expedition has not taken place yet. It really has to take place under the right conditions, or what we intend to accomplish will fail.
My nephew is a geologist, PhD at Skidmore, and I told my brother about this, but I don't know if he passed the information on. It'd be a wonderful opportunity for him, you know.
Yeah.
Are all the positions filled for geologists? Or?
No. In fact, we published an ad, a call for papers in Geological Society of America, GSA's national magazine, in September or October. It was the conference edition of the magazine. It went out to 27,000 subscribing geologists, and we received zero papers. So we have no geologists signed.
Well, you know, maybe I could, I'll talk to him directly. And, you know, Skidmore is quite Ivy League, let's say, you know. And maybe there's some way that he could get some financing, too, you know, from the alumnus of Skidmore.
Well, that's
so
all, that would be more hopeful than you could imagine. We have Stanford University, MIT, and we have some private institutions that are involved, and, of course, nationally recognized photographers and tectonic plate experts coming with us, but so far no geologists, and it would be an honor to have that organization involved.
Well, maybe there are some listeners that are involved with Skidmore that might, raise the point, you know, and my nephew, you know. I'm sure he'd love to do the trip. Might be a little rough from what I understand with 150-foot waves.
Yeah, it's not going to be a summer cruise, that's for sure. Where we're going, except for Tierra Fuego and the southern tip of South America, there is not a rougher ocean out there. But the ship we're taking is 450 feet long. It weighs 23,000 tons, and it's nuclear-powered, so we should be okay.
Okay, well, I will contact him and have him contact you on your website, or what would he do?
The easiest way, if you go to NPIEE.org, that's NPIEE.org, stands for North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. There's contact information there. I've got an email address there. My phone number is there. People call me a couple of times a day, contributing information and resources, and I am the most reachable person on Earth. None of my numbers are unlisted, and I have my cell phone with me 24 hours a day.
Okay. I will contact him, and hopefully there's somebody listening that knows a little about Skidmore or whatever, and maybe they might push for a little bit of this and give some financing, too.
Yeah, I hope so. That's exactly what we need.
Can I say the last name of my nephew?
Sure.
Dr. Nichols, PhD, and he teaches at Skidmore. Okay.
Very good.
All right. I will contact him and see what we can do.
Very good.
Right,
thank you
very
much. Thank you so much for the call.
Okay.
And I think that's it for us tonight on the X Squared Radio. Sorry about the premature end. I didn't know I had a caller on the line, but now we have to make room for the next host. We appreciate you, Earth Explorers, and we'll see you next week, 5 p.m. Pacific.